coming to you from the mountains and the plains. The only conservative voices brave enough to push back. This is the Conservative Daily Podcast with Joe Altman.
That's what the Second Amendment was designed to do. If you're going to do something to nullify or take away my rights under the Constitution, come get it.
Max McGuire.
When you look at politicians on the left, they need to convince people that they are victims.
A resistance to the resistance. And now your hosts, Joe Altman and Max McGuire.
And welcome back to another edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. My name is Max McGuire. Joe might be joining us, might not. He's out of town. He's visiting family for the Thanksgiving holiday. So he's out of town. So he might remote in. He might not. But we're going to go and get started anyway, because there's so much to talk about today and not nearly enough time. So I want to do a deep dive into what's going on in Wisconsin. And because there's real serious funny business going on. The Democrats did everything they can to steal the election on Election Day, and now they're doing everything they possibly can to stop the recount from uncovering that theft. So we're going to be doing a deep dive into Wisconsin, what they did in the lead up, what they did after, how they've changed the rules during the recount. We're going to talk a little bit about how COVID-19 is playing a role in this recount, how they're using that as an excuse to keep the challengers far away. I want to talk a little bit about how ridiculous some of the COVID-19 stuff that we're seeing is, but I'll get to that at the end. But before we start, I want to give a little bit of good news. Let's go ahead and put up Cut Alpha, Cut A. This is an order from the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Do we have that, Mr. Producer? You should have that. Cut Alpha, Cut A. Notice from the Third Circuit Court of Appeals that they have accepted Donald Trump's appeal and they're going to expedite it. And that they're demanding that all of the briefs be filed on or before 4 p.m. on November 24th. So that's tomorrow. So as we mentioned on the podcast, the Obama judge, we have his picture. Let's go ahead and put his picture up. It's image C. Matthew Brand. Oh, he looks like a fun guy. Matthew Brand, appointed to be district judge by Barack Hussein Obama. He issued a ruling basically throwing out everything that Trump was alleging. Let's go ahead and put that up on the screen. Image B. Bravo. This is what the media kind of ran with. One might expect that when seeking such a startling outcome, a plaintiff would come formidably armed with compelling legal arguments and factual proof of rampant corruption, such that this court would have no option but to regrettably grant the proposed injunctive relief, despite the impact it would have on such a large group of citizens. So right then and there, he's saying that even if Trump came with evidence that convinced him, he would still regrettably grant the relief. Yeah, he's really an unbiased arbiter of justice. He then continues, that has not happened. Instead, this court has been presented with strained legal arguments without merit and speculative accusations, unpled in the operative complaint and unsupported by evidence. So that is what the mainstream media kind of ran with. But if we go ahead and put up image D, image Delta, this comes from the other part of the ruling that he just put out. On November 17th, 2020, the court prepared to address the parties in oral argument. That morning, attorney Rudolph Giuliani entered his appearance on behalf of plaintiffs. With this last minute appearance, plaintiffs had made their final addition to their representation. At the conclusion of the argument, I determined that an evidentiary hearing, previously scheduled to take place on November 19, 2020, was no longer needed and canceled that proceeding. So this is how the left operates. They scream that there's no evidence. And then lower in the ruling, you see that, oh no, it was the judge who canceled the evidentiary hearing. So he said, oh, I would have liked for the Trump campaign to present evidence. But then it was him who canceled an evidentiary hearing, saying it wasn't necessary. So that ruling, tossing out all of Trump's Philadelphia challenges, is now being expedited and is going to be heard tomorrow. They're going to start reading the briefs in the Third Circuit Court of Appeals tomorrow. So I want everyone, let's celebrate a little bit, because that's good news. Let's hit that share button on Facebook. Give us a thumbs up, a like, comment. And on YouTube, make sure you give us this video a thumbs up. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell for notifications, comment. And yeah, share it. If you're on Parler, make sure you share our YouTube link there as well. Let's get some more people on this, because we're going to be doing a really big deep dive specifically into Wisconsin today, because it's too important not to. So let's get started on that. The recount's underway in Wisconsin. Trump has paid $3 million just to recount two counties. Now, as we mentioned on the podcast, 4 years ago, when the Green Party, when Jill Stein wanted a recount, they only had to pay $2 million for the whole state. Trump has to pay $3 million for two counties. They wanted Trump to pay almost $8 million to do the whole state. He said, no, that's ridiculous. I'll just focus on where the fraud was the most significant. So they're recounting in Milwaukee, and they're recounting in the county surrounding, I believe, Dane County, county surrounding Madison. So let's go ahead and look at what the Milwaukee recount room looks like. Let's put up image one. This is kind of a wide angle lens photograph, but you can see, do we have image one? Oh, Mr. Producer Josh, image one. Here we go. they're basically taking the entire expo hall. And if it looks weird, it should, because this is what it looks like. Let's go ahead and put up image two. This is what each of those tables look like. Image two. There we go. So we have these. This is what the actual recount tables in Milwaukee look like. So you have the challengers on the left. They have to sit on their chair and they have to be behind the line. Now, those challengers are breaking the rules. Their feet are over that yellow line. But they have to be, I believe it's 5 or 6 feet away from the table, from the counter. Then they have plexiglass, and then you have the counters on the other side. Here's the most ridiculous part, and you can read it if you're watching, if you're listening to the audio version, I'll tell you. The challengers are allowed to sit right next to each other with no social distancing. The counters are allowed to sit and stand right next to each other with no social distancing. But the Election Commission says it's too dangerous for the challengers and the counters to be close together with no social distancing. Really, really stunning stuff, right? I mean, so the counters can just intermingle, the challengers can just intermingle, but they're using the excuse of COVID to not let the challengers get close. It's just, if that doesn't show you how this whole thing is rigged, I don't know what will. In Madison, Wisconsin, it's a little bit better. Let's go ahead and put up image three. It's a little bit better. The challengers are actually able to get at the same table and sit down. And they, if they challenge something, they hold it up and they'll show them. So in Madison, at least it's a little bit better, but not a whole lot, not a whole lot at all. And the good news is that we do actually, the Democrats in Wisconsin said, don't worry if the in-person challenging isn't sufficient, don't worry. We have video feeds so that people can watch at home and can spot things that are spot the funny business. Let's go ahead and put up my screen. We have a couple of these live feeds. Let's look through them. This is from Dane County. This is their one. Does anyone seriously think you can watch this and see anything of significance? Of course not, right? Anything white is bleached out from the light. So right there, you have no hope of possibly seeing anything written on a piece of paper. And you're not even a top-down view. You're below eye height. So it's not possible to see anything. Let's look at the next one. This next feed, this is an interesting feed, but the important thing from here is that you're actually looking at this from the challenger's side. So you're not even doing a top-down look from the ballot counters. You're looking from behind the challengers. So you'd have to, so if a challenger is blocking something, you can't see it. I mean, does anyone seriously think that you could ever use a feed like this to catch any fraud? And then there's this one. Oh yeah, we're really going to challenge the results here. Don't worry, we only allow one challenger to be at each table. But don't worry, we have the video feed, so you can keep us honest at home. What a joke. What an absolute joke. And we have one more. Yeah, this is the most useless of all feeds. Literally nothing is going on. Thank you so much, Dane County, Wisconsin, for making sure that we have this feed. Really, really, really important. I really appreciate it. We can go ahead and take that down off the screen. I just wanted to show that in real time. Maybe we'll go back to it and check later to see if anything of significance is happening. Not saying that there isn't, just saying that those camera feeds, there's no way they possibly could help and assist anyone in challenging remotely or challenging from a couple extra steps back. Yes, it is the illusion of legitimacy. So that's what's going on in Wisconsin. And how do we get here? How do we get to this point? Well, Donald Trump lost Wisconsin. He's losing by roughly 20,000 votes. How do we get there? Well, we've talked about this on the show before. Donald Trump was leading by 120,000 votes. And then all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, Joe Biden got 140,000 votes and he took the lead. And it was at what, 3:42 a.m., I believe, was the exact time. At 3:41, Trump was ahead. At 3:42, Biden was ahead. Biden had made up 140,000 votes in the difference. It really is incredible, because anyone who looked at it, we could tell that there was something fishy. We could tell that something wasn't quite right, and that if we just could do a deeper dive, then we'd know what was going on. And as we reported, now we kind of do know what happened. There's a woman, Claire Woodall-Vogg. She's the head of elections in Milwaukee, and she misplaced the flash drive. She misplaced the flash drive. The flash drive that had been put into the Dominion voting system's tabulator and had the ballot count uploaded to it went missing for 10 to 20 minutes. Now, she claims that, oh no, don't worry, it was in a secure facility. It was being monitored. No one had their eyes off of it. The problem is that's not true, right? And let's go ahead and put up this bogus fact check. Let's go ahead and put up, this is image 12. Image 12. This is a fact check from PolitiFact. And image 12. This is a fact check from PolitiFact. We should have it. Do you have it? I'm looking at it. It's in the email. Image 12, a fact check from PolitiFact claiming that there was nothing shady about the lost Milwaukee elections flash drive. Mr. Bruiser, where do we have the image? Image 12. I promise it was in the email over to you. There we go. PolitiFact, pants on fire. It's pants on fire, they say, to claim that the lost flash drive, that there was something shady about it. They're saying that pants on fire. And if you read what they actually say is, they say it, nothing shady happened, because even though they lost it, the Democrat in charge knew that it was in a facility that was staffed and that had someone watching the area. That's what they claimed. So they knew nothing shady could have possibly happened. Let's go ahead and take that off the screen. Here's the problem. It was connected to a Dominion voting systems tabulator. We know that those tabulators have the ability to be connected to the internet. So the fact that it was actually plugged into that, anyone could have hacked it. We know the machines are easily hackable. Anyone could have hacked it. Anyone could have changed results. That's why you don't leave things in machines like that. But the argument that it was in a room that was staffed, and don't worry, there were plenty of people around, as we've talked about on the podcast, was also completely BS. Completely BS. We played this video. Let's go ahead and play this. This is cut one. This is what it looked like in that room. The woman actually in the tabulator. That's the machine in question. This is the room they're talking about. It's the entire footprint of an office building, open floor plan, and they're claiming, oh, don't worry, it was in a room that we had control of. Well, no, it was in the corner. Everyone else was on the other corner of the room, big open floor plan. No one was at that area. No one was hanging around the tabulators. And yes, it was removed from the chain of custody because no one knew where it was. It cannot be in the proper chain of custody if everyone involved all says, I have no idea where it is. That's not chain of custody. You can say, oh, well, don't worry, we lost it, but we don't think anyone hacked it. That's different than saying it was in the proper chain of custody. So we know that flash drive went missing. We know that police allegedly tried to call it in, and the elections official said, no, don't worry, we'll find it. And we know that immediately after it was found, it was basically brought over to the other building by a police escort, put into the full state tabulation. And lo and behold, at that very instant, Joe Biden jumps ahead of Donald Trump. I mean, I'd love to believe that there's no funny business here, but the jump, the 140,000 vote jump that Joe Biden had, where he literally went whoop, straight up, coincides with that missing flash drive being refound and then brought back into the full state tabulation. So it's just too much funny business. But beyond the electronic part of it, we also have real problems with how Wisconsin managed their election in the lead up to Election Day. Let's go ahead and put up image 4. This is basically a quick bullet point of some of the major changes that Wisconsin's Elections Commission made in the lead up to the election. So they permitted local county election clerks to cure spoiled ballots by filling in missing addresses for witnesses, even though state law invalidates any ballot without a witness address. So if you submit a ballot and you don't write your address, state law says that ballot should be thrown out. But we know that local election clerks were given permission from the state election commission to cure the ballots, to fix the mistakes. So as we look around the country and we see, wow, the number of invalidated spoiled ballots is ridiculously low. We expect it to be between 3% and 4%, and it's less than 0.5%. How does that happen? That happens because they actually went through the process of unspoiling. So even though state law says you have to throw it out, the election commission allowed the local election officials, clerks, to fill in stuff on behalf of the voter. Very, very illegal, right? That is your ballot. If you do the ballot wrong, sorry, it's wrong. No redos. So that's the first one. The second one was that it exempted as many as 200,000 citizens from voter ID rules in 2020 by allowing them to claim the COVID-19 pandemic caused them to be, quote, indefinitely confined. This is an important one. This is an important one because when you look at indefinitely confined in the 2016 race, I believe there was 50, 60,000 people in Wisconsin who reported that they were indefinitely confined to their home, that they couldn't leave the home. They need an absentee ballot. Now you can get absentee ballots other ways, but you have to show an ID under Wisconsin law. If you're indefinitely confined, basically you're sick, you're dying, you're in hospice, there's no physical way for you to come out, then Wisconsin law says, okay, we're going to be compassionate. We want you to still vote. You can't come out of your house, so you don't have to show your ID. So it went from 60,000 some odd indefinitely confined voters, representing 6 or 7% of the vote in 2016, all the way up to 215,000 indefinitely confined voters in this election, representing 11% of the total vote. Now, these people are not indefinitely confined. They cheated the system. They are not immobile. They are not too sick to move. They are not confined inside of a bubble, right? They could go outside. They just choose not to. So we know that roughly 200,000 people, well, there are legitimate ones in there. So let's just be fair. More than 150,000 people improperly registered themselves as COVID-19 indefinitely confined to their home. And that allowed them to vote without a voter ID. To do that for the express purpose of not having your voter ID seen, that's criminal. But then it comes down to intent. Can you prove that that was the reason? Can you prove that was the reason that they did this? I don't know, because they could have done it anyway. They could have gotten an absentee ballot any other number of ways, but they would have had to show an ID. Is it really all that surprising that in this election, so close, with so many irregularities, so many discrepancies, so many allegations of fraud, so many attempts to hide what's going on, that you also have a record number of people using a loophole to be able to vote absentee without having to prove their identities? It's one of those things. It's one of those things that you have to ask about. You have to look. Let's go ahead and put that image back up. Let's go ahead and put up image 4. The last one is that Wisconsin allegedly failed this year to purge 130,000 names from outdated voter rolls as required by law. Now, this is, most states have something like this, where if you do not vote in a certain number of sequential elections, you are considered to be an outdated voter file, right? They're presumed that you don't live there anymore, that you're dead, right? They take you off the rolls. It's not permanent. You can still get back on the voter rolls. But if you don't vote for however many elections under state law consecutively, they say, okay, you're an inactive voter, and they're supposed to, under Wisconsin law, to purge them. It didn't happen this year. So you had 130,000 voter records, registered voters, who were inactive, who state law says we can't trust that they're really voters anymore, and we don't want those voter registrations to be used fraudulently. Let's make sure we kick them out of the system. We'll make it very easy for them to re-register, but we're going to make sure that there's no fraud by limiting fraudsters' ability to use those inactive registration files, inactive voters, to cast illegal ballots. So that didn't happen. So that's kind of the threefer, right? You have the clerks illegally editing ballots, filling in stuff. And what we're hearing from the Trump campaign is that there's a shocking number of objections going on right now in Milwaukee, in Dane County, because they're seeing ballots with multiple colors of pen. What does that mean? That means that the voter filled it out using a black pen, and then someone else came along and filled out other parts using a blue pen or some other different color. Or they're noticing that someone used a pen and then someone used a Sharpie. They're noticing that different pens were used, which is really, really strange. Now, it's one thing, like, maybe you're using a pen and it starts running out of ink, you change pens, fine. But for it to happen that many times is a huge red flag. And what we're seeing from the Democrats in control of the election board in this area is that they are basically trying to stop all the challenges from happening. Let's go to image 11. Image 11. This is from Milwaukee officials, actually from The Hill. And the headline says, Milwaukee officials accuse Trump observers of obstructing recount. And it says, officials overseeing the election in Wisconsin's largest county on Saturday accused ballot tabulation observers for President Trump of trying to obstruct the recount. Milwaukee County Clerk George Christensen said that in some cases, observers were objecting to nearly every ballot pulled to count. Christensen said the complaints were putting the recount behind schedule, and many observers were breaking the rules by interrupting vote counters with questions or objections. He called the behavior unacceptable. Yes, it is apparently unacceptable for observers to challenge. You know, if they're challenging almost every ballot, what does that tell you about the ballots? Doesn't necessarily say that they're out of bounds. It says that there's a lot of things that they can possibly challenge. But what we're seeing, what we're already seeing, is the Democrats are attempting to change the rules. They're attempting to change the rules. Oh, let me put this up. I forgot this one. Image 5, just so everyone can see. This is the change in how many Wisconsin voters were registered themselves as indefinitely confined. You can see that in November of 2016, it was 6.9%. All the way to this year, November, it was 11%, over 215,000. Just so you can see the increase. That's not, Wisconsin isn't being plagued by terminal illnesses, right? The hospice centers aren't overflowing. These are people gaming the system to try and vote in a way that won't require them to show ID, which makes you question, why are they doing that? This has been a tweet that started going viral. It's from someone who's on the ground, Scott Tapley, on the ground, observing the recount. So let's go ahead and put up, what's that, image 6. He's saying that the Wisconsin recount is a clown show and that the rules are constantly changing to thwart Trump campaign challenges. Now, what does he mean by that? Go to image 7. He says, this morning they added a requirement that two observers need to object for an objection to be made. But later in the morning, the election officials limited the Trump campaign to only having one observer per station. Now the rules have been changed so observers cannot talk to poll workers unless they're objecting a ballot. No questions allowed. So the really interesting thing about this is that, first of all, that is not constitutional. You cannot be a government official and say you're not allowed to ask questions. Pesky First Amendment, I know. But the interesting thing, put it back up. They said you need two observers to object, but the Trump campaign is only allowed to have one observer at the table, which means there would either need to be an independent observer or a Democrat observer agreeing. Now, as we looked at the video screen, there's not a whole lot of tables with three observers. So that means that under that rule, which I think was actually overturned, in that rule change, they actually said that in order for the Trump campaign to object, the Democrats had to object to, or an independent had to object to. How does that work? How is that possibly fair? And yet that's what was happening in real time on the floor. Let's go ahead and put up image 8. It keeps going. A few minutes ago, the canvassing board decided objections because an observer cannot see the ballots are not allowed. Think about that for a second. If you're an observer and you say, I object, I can't see the ballot. They say, oh no, that objection is not allowed. Sorry, ballot's been counted. Let's move to the next one. That's how scummy this thing is, people. I'll say it again on Facebook. Hit that share button right now. Very important. On YouTube, make sure you give us a thumbs up. Hit the subscribe button. Hit the bell for notifications. Really scummy stuff. Let's go ahead and put that image up again. This after new rule that observers have to stand behind a chair, as we showed, and the chair has to be behind a yellow line 5+ feet away from the table. And counters can hold ballots and or absentee applications at an angle that prevents observation. And they says, 8, it is clear that Democrats do not want anyone to be able to see what's going on. Now, we showed it in the beginning, but let's go ahead and put up image 2 again. This is what he's talking about. Image 2. They're on the chair. They're being forced to stay behind the yellow line. They're 5 to 6 feet away. And look, you can see that woman is holding a piece of paper at an angle that makes it impossible for them to see. Really, really scummy. And we're seeing it's all true. It's all absolutely true. It's unbelievable. And we talked about this too. In the lead up to this, the Democrats were frantically trying to change the recount manual in Wisconsin. I sat on that call for at least 2 hours, and it was hard to listen to. It is hard to listen to bureaucrats arguing about substantive changes to recount manuals in a state that I've only been to once in my entire life. It's very, very hard to do that. But I want to talk about what they tried to change because it's stunning. So let's go ahead to image 9. And the great thing is we could see what the old manual was like and what the new manual, what they want it to be. And now I want to clarify, none of these changes got approved. But this is what they were trying to do. They were trying to stage a last minute fight. This one's just funny. Trying to change any mention of his or her to they or their. Transgender BS, right? Oh, we have to amend the manual to be more trans friendly. Shut up. But that was, I just wanted to show that it's a lot of stupid stuff too. But let's go ahead and put up the next image. Let's go ahead and put image 10. This was the big one. This is a doozy. So you can see on the left, that's the old version of the manual. There was nothing there. And this is what they tried to put into the new manual. Public health, quote, public health guidance should be considered by the Board of Canvassers when setting up the recount location and observation areas. Social distancing, the use of face coverings, and hand hygiene requirements should all be clearly communicated to individuals attending the recount in person to ensure the safety of everyone involved in the recount. The Board of Canvassers will need to appropriately balance public health guidance and the candidate's representative's right to view ballots and materials and lodge any objections to the counting of a ballot. That was the big thing that Democrats were trying to shove through, giving these local officials the power to balance public health requirements and the candidate's right to see a ballot, aka it's too dangerous to allow Trump's people to see ballots. COVID-19 makes it impossible. That's what they tried to push through. Thank goodness the Republicans held the line. But as we saw in Dane County, as we saw in Milwaukee, the Democrats there did it anyway. They did it anyway, right? They still put the stupid plexiglass. They still did the stupid social distancing. They did it anyway. So what's the recourse? Well, the Trump campaign is literally challenging every single ballot that they think is funny. So in Milwaukee, they're not setting aside ballots, I believe, but in Madison area, they are setting aside ballots one way or the other. In one county, they are setting aside challenge ballots, in the other, they're not. And so the Trump campaign is basically staging for a court fight and saying, we objected, Democrats said no, we need an actual neutral arbiter to decide whether or not our objections are legitimate. So they're basically challenging all the ballots that they can challenge, and then they're going to try and go to court over it. Again, this is going to be hard because the deadline to certify Wisconsin's election is coming up pretty fast, right? It is coming up pretty fast. And the same is true in Michigan. Same is true in Michigan. And in Michigan, in this hour, we actually have a meeting at the Michigan Board of State Canvassers. They are the final step in certifying election results. And right now, it is deadlocked. There are two Democrats, two Republicans. Right now, both Republicans have said no. We are not going to certify Michigan. There's too much going. There's too many irregularities, too many discrepancies, too much fraud. This is a big deal, guys. Two Democrats in Michigan statewide say, let's certify it. Two Republicans say, nah, I'm not comfortable. And now they have gone to public comment. So I'm going to regret this, but let's go ahead and put the public comment on. Let's listen for a little bit to see if there's anything substantive happening or if it's like what we saw at the local one threatening them. Let's go to that.
And then forget
video
until
right
the
now.
Next election. If folks are proud of a 71% out of balance count in our largest community in the state, then we have very different ideas.
She's against
I implore
certifying. That's
the
good.
Board of Canvassers to provide meaningful review of Wayne County. In the future, I would ask this board to do three things. First, please use your platform to ensure that all challengers and participants in the election process are treated equally, regardless of their party. Second, please use your platform
so this is the Michigan GOP chairwoman
and intimidation
Laura Cox.
To Republicans and all parties. All deserve to have an election with integrity where every legal vote is counted. Third, please demand more from the election counting process so all questions can be answered to ensure fair and accurate vote. I ask you to do that today. I will continue to stand up for Republicans and demand that they be respected. And I will demand a meaningful review of the votes for the people of Michigan. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Let's cut it. So that was interesting. We happened to tune in. That wasn't queued up. That was live. We just happened to tune in at the moment that the Michigan Republican chairwoman, Laura Cox, was speaking. And so right now, as I said, that board is deadlocked. Two Republicans, two Democrats. One Republican said, no, too many discrepancies, can't possibly do it. The other one said no, but they also wanted to hear from public commenters. So that guy's the wishy-washy one. I don't have his name, but one of the Republicans on the board gave a conditional no that he also wanted to hear the public commenters. What could these public commenters possibly say to change the irregularities? The fact that 71% of the vote is irreconcilable, meaning that there are too many votes. There are more votes than registered voters, right? Or there are more voters than votes. It just doesn't add up, right? How could public comment from a bunch of angry Democrats and I guess one Republican, how could public comment possibly change the realities on the ground? I mean, but we saw in Wayne County, the public commenters use that to threaten the board of canvassers, threaten their children, to dox them, right? To say, we're coming for y'all's heads. Listen, that's the only thing that could come out of this. I mean, I'm hopeful that the Republicans stand their ground, but be prepared. Be prepared for another surrender. That's what Republicans, at least these days, establishment Republicans, that's what they seem to do best. So we have all this going on. And what's going on in Wisconsin with the COVID restrictions is just, it's ludicrous, right? We'll put it up again. Let's put up image two again. It is ludicrous. Absolutely ludicrous that the challengers are allowed to sit next to each other. The counters are allowed to sit next to each other, but the challengers have to be far away from the counters. It just doesn't make sense. There is no logic there. If the rule is that everyone needs to have plexiglass, then there should be plexiglass separating everyone. But that's not the rule, is it? The rule is only that you have to keep people as far away as possible. And we're seeing the lunacy of the left in these COVID restrictions kind of expanding. And you can see the lunacy in how the left is treating restaurants. We'll get back to Wisconsin in a second, but I want to talk about this because this is too ridiculous. This is getting ridiculous. Put up image 13. This is from an Applebee's in Kentucky saying, we have a heated tent and we are open for regular business hours serving the Corbin, Kentucky area now. So they're not allowed to serve any food indoors. So what they do, they bought a tent and put it in their parking lot. That's not outdoor seating. That's just creating indoors outdoors. Am I missing something? I mean, this is so stupid. look at image 14. This one actually isn't that bad, but this is in New York City. Look at that. You're in cover closed tents. That's not outdoors. Let's put up image 15. This is the stupidest one of them all. This is not outdoor seating. This restaurant erected a freaking greenhouse. Yes, that is a little greenhouse that you would get for your backyard if you wanted to start practicing with your green thumb. They put a greenhouse and that constitutes outside. No, that's indoor dining with the door open. It's not outdoors. How is that safer? How is that possibly safer? It's just indoor dining. Indoors. I want to cover all these because they're too funny. This is a St. Louis bar. Let's go to image 16. This one actually looks like a fun space. If you're looking for an outdoor patio, this bar in St. Louis is actually renovating their outdoor patio specifically for outdoor dining. But listen, when it has a roof, when it has walls, it's not outdoor dining anymore. It's just indoor dining. Outside of the normal establishment. Again, looks like a fun outdoor space. But that's not indoor. That's not outdoor dining. And this is the craziest one. This is the absolute craziest one. Let's put up image 17. This is Gavin Newsom's birthday party. I'm sure you saw this on Fox News. Gavin Newsom's birthday party. Notice no masks. Notice no social distancing. Chairs right next to each other. Let's put up image 18. This is what they say was outdoor dining. How is that outdoor dining? Okay, show of hands. Has anyone ever been outdoors with a chandelier over their head? Personally, I can never say that I was outdoors standing under a chandelier. Usually when there's a roof and there's four walls, usually that constitutes indoors. But no, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, claims that that, put it back up, image 18, he's claiming that this is outdoor dining. That is not outdoors. Just because there's a sliding glass door cracked open doesn't make it outdoor dining. If it has four walls, a roof, and a freaking chandelier, it's indoor dining, and you're a hypocrite. And did anyone watch his press conference? He's like, oh, well, if I knew what it was going to be like, I would have turned my car right around. It was his birthday party. It was his birthday party. You don't get to claim ignorance on your birthday party. It's your birthday party. You knew people were going. You knew it was going to be that way. And you went. You can't say, oh, I was completely shocked. Shocked, I tell you. It wasn't a surprise party. It wasn't a surprise party. Oh, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills because the insanity is just spreading. And then there's this one. Remember, we covered this on the podcast a while ago. The Philadelphia mayor got caught dining indoors in Maryland while Philadelphia restaurants were not allowed to be open. Let's put up image 19. This was his apology. I know some are upset that I dined indoors at a restaurant in Maryland yesterday. I felt the risk was low because the county I visited has had fewer than 800 COVID-19 cases compared to over 33,000 cases in Philadelphia. Regardless, I understand the frustration. Then let's go to image 20. This was his follow-up tweet. Restaurant owners are among the hardest hit by the pandemic. I'm sorry if my decision hurt those who've worked to keep their businesses open, businesses going from going under in difficult circumstances. Oh. Looking forward to reopening indoor dining soon and visiting my favorite spots. And you can see that he's basically commenting with the Department of Commerce alert that indoor dining is back on September 8th in Philadelphia. Here's the problem. Oops, he lied. Image 21. Philly restaurant owner sue Mayor Kenny on indoor dining ban. He just banned it again. So he got caught eating indoors in another state, apologized, responded by reopening indoor dining. So they're all getting back on their feet, but boom, closed again. Sorry. Updated November 19th. Philly restaurant owners are suing him, saying that it isn't arbitrary and has no basis in science. They're absolutely right. They're absolutely right. The Supreme Court has said in reaction to novel viruses, states have leeway in what they're allowed to do. But this is not a novel coronavirus anymore. We are not in month one. We have therapeutics. We know how to protect against it. We know how to treat it, right? We understand it. So this whole thing of, well, one week you're allowed to have a restaurant, next week you're not, that's arbitrary, capricious, unconstitutional. So thank goodness they're fighting it. But it's just, you look at what's going on, and it's just so crazy. And they get away with it. They get away with the stuff in Wisconsin because no one fought back against the restaurants. No one fought back on the schools. No one fought back on anything. So, well, you wouldn't expect to be able to go to a restaurant. Why would you expect to be able to stand across a table with a ballot counter? Well, no, I reject the premise entirely. I reject the premise entirely. The whole purposes of masks, according to them, is especially important when social distancing is not possible. To wear masks and enforce social distancing and put up the plexiglass, it's overkill. It's not actual science. That's political theater. And it's a deliberate attempt to steal results, to stop a recount from actually uncovering the fraud. It's absolutely insane. So I want to jump to this, and then we'll go back to talking about Wisconsin. I promise. Again, hit that share button on Facebook. Make sure that you like it. Make sure you comment on YouTube. Make sure you like the video. Hit the subscribe button. Then hit the bell for notifications if you haven't already. Very, very important. I want to play this because it kind of does mesh with this whole talk of COVID's going crazy. COVID going crazy. This is a video from Shanghai Airport. I don't know when it was. It had to have been the last day or two, last couple of days. So in Shanghai's airport, they do routine COVID testing. And they discovered that first it was reported one, now it's been confirmed two baggage handlers tested positive. I want to show you what resulted from those two. This is an international airport and they had two positive tests. Now, what would a sane person do? A sane person would say, okay, why don't you go home? We'll test you again to make sure it's not a false positive, but go home. And hey, we're going to test everyone else that you came into direct contact with. Like, not just touching their bag, but actually, like, talking and being close to people. Oh, we'll test them. No, what Shanghai's airport did is decide to corral every single person in the airport to test them all. And the video is crazy. We're seeing some reports that it's 10,000, some reporting that 100,000 people got caught up in this attempt to corral them. But the video is absolutely stunning. Let's go ahead and play cut two. So those are the health experts in their white suits trying to hold back the mob. And the mob's bursting through, like saying, no, we're not going to be held like this. This is ridiculous. But look at that. Now they're in like the bottom of like a parking garage. And now they're being stopped again at the ramp. So they brought them all to the bottom of the parking garage. Look at this. This is insane. This is insanity. Let's cut the video. So they took everyone in the airport, and they shoved them all into the basement of a parking garage. Because two people tested positive, that means everyone has to be shoved into a parking garage and tested. Now, if that looks really stupid, it makes sense. If you're afraid of COVID-19 spreading, the last thing you do is shove everyone into a parking garage like that. Like, what? That is what Democrats want to bring here. You listen to Democrats like, oh, well, China responded to the virus well. And look, they've had very low cases. Well, no, China doesn't report their case numbers accurately. Can't trust them. But Democrats, oh, they reacted swiftly. If only Trump had reacted swiftly. That's what they're talking about. If two people test positive in an international airport, everyone just gets shoved into a parking garage for mandatory testing. And yes, if anyone is positive in that, yes, everyone's going to get it, right? It's guaranteed. If you're shoving people in like that in sardines, yes, respiratory viruses will spread in that scenario. Now, but Democrats would say technically, because it is open air, there's no walls and no windows, that's technically outside. According to what, Manhattan's outdoor dining regulations. This is crazy. And here's another video. This is what it looked like from above. Let's go ahead and play cut three. Look at this. They shoved them into the parking garage. And you got men in white suits trying to stop them from escaping. This is incredible. That's incredible. That's what Democrats want to bring here. Like... We're seeing in Oregon. Let me pull it up. Oregon has a new ruling. They're banning indoor dining, even in your own house. They're saying that if you catch anyone eating indoors, you're supposed to snitch on them. They want you to call the cops as if it's a noise violation. We do have Joe now with us, calling in remotely up from an RV, it looks like. Can you hear me, Joe?
Hey, how you doing? Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Are you on the road?
I am. I'm officially not at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the good news is under Colorado law, that is your domicile. So that RV counts as a home. So you are home for all the ways that count.
Yeah.
I don't know. Were you able to watch any of what I was just showing in Shanghai?
No, I just got back in. And so, no, but I mean, give me an update. I needed to take a break. I took my family and we got out of town, obviously for a lot of reasons, but the biggest of which is just the pressure. Just, I'm not saying I can't handle pressure, but it got to be a little too much. There's just too much going on right now that just points us towards being a very communist society. Crazy. Yeah.
So, speaking of communism, we just showed a video. Well, let's play it again briefly for Joe. The backstory is Shanghai Airport, two employees tested positive for coronavirus, and they proceeded to take everyone in the airport, shove them into the basement of the parking garage so that they could test everyone. Let's play the real quick cut three. It's insane. It's insane. Now let's go to cut three.
Yeah. Real quick.
It's insane. So we cut it there. We started talking about this because we started talking about how insane it is to have these rules. Like, let's put up again, Mr. Producer, image two. This is what the recount looks like in Milwaukee, where they have to stand behind a line, and the counters are allowed to be right next to each other. The challengers are allowed to be right next to each other, but the challengers can't be near the counters. There's no, that has nothing to do with science, right? And then put up image 15. This is the most egregious, like the stupidest example of outdoor dining in Manhattan. They literally just put a greenhouse on their sidewalk. That's not outdoor dining. That's just indoors being brought outdoors. So we're talking about the craziness of the ballots. Then we kind of talk about the restaurants and how we've let them get away with it. And then we jump to that Shanghai stunning video of people just being almost trampled, all because two people in an airport tested positive. It's just, this is getting out of control.
Well, we're seeing the start of a, and I'm just going to say it, you'd say, Joe, that's absolutely nuts. It can't be happening. You're starting to see this globalism try to take root in everything that we do. They're doing it all at once. It's a concerted effort. You can say whatever you want, but we are dealing with the most evil axis you could possibly find. You find out that Dominion and Smartmatic and these companies have been working together. They have a single axis of the Clinton Foundation, George Soros, other people that are just really, really evil that are all connecting them. And I have to tell you, at some point, we are going to have to stand up and stand up strong and stand up together because it's scary. It's scary, Max. It's really, really scary. I mean, just to think about, you know, collectively what we're going through as a country in the U.S., if you would have told me that this would have happened 2 years ago, I would have told you that it was not even possible. But yeah, They've turned it into a circus. We're literally dealing with absolute chaos. And frankly, we're law-abiding people, so we don't want to fight against it. But what other choice do we have? When, I mean, they say that there's no proof of fraud. We've probably brought 5,000 examples of fraud. 5,000, yeah. Easily 5,000 examples of fraud. And yet we sit here as people having some PR junkie, and I'm going to call him that, Michael Steele. He's a spokesperson for Dominion. He was just hired for Dominion. He comes out and says that the machines can't even do what they say they can do.
Yeah.
And frankly, we're supposed to just eat it up. Oh, no fraud. Yeah. Let's just move on. We are over the target. Right now, we are over the target. We know that we're over the target. And they're going to, you know, and they can't help the fact that people are fighting against it because there's this thing called sensibilities. There's this thing called reality. And most people can't walk away from it. Some can. Yeah. And that's what you have where people say, oh, there's no fraud. Let's just move on. I just don't want to have any chaos anymore because people don't want to have conflict. But right now we've got to have that conflict. We have to stand up right now.
So,
and I'm hunting, by the way, if you want to know where I am.
Oh, nice. I said this to you yesterday. Let's go ahead and put up my screen. So last week, I'll just explain for everyone else. Last week we had the Secretary of State's office. Oh, we lost Joe. We had the Secretary of State's office in Colorado remove a proposal that the state had received from Dominion Voting Systems years ago. And it's like a proposal for, hey, we're going to take over your whole state's electronic voting. This is great. Public record. It was on there and it got removed. And they thought we wouldn't notice, but no, we noticed, and we had everything screenshot, everything archived. And when it came up, this is what it was replaced with. A lot of censorship, a lot of redactions. And yes, this is Eric Coomer's part of that document, where they just completely censored him out so that you can't know his name. So it's a public record. The people of Colorado are supposed to be able to know who pitched it. Right, that's public record. They have no legal reason to believe that they would remain anonymous. They are executives in a company that made a pitch to the state to take over electronic voting. They have no basis to remain anonymous. But the state came in and said, nope, we're not going to let you know who did it. But no, we know this is Eric Coomer. And the fact that you can see how small the redactions are for the first name shows, yes, it is Eric Coomer. And we have the original.
Well, what else did we find, though, Matt? What else did we find? What else did they do on the document?
Oh, yeah. So there, the words Venezuela and Smartmatic also appear in the document. But for whatever reason, if you do a control F search of the document and type in Venezuela or Smartmatic, it'll come up with no results. Now, it's very, very interesting. People are compiling a list of other words that aren't searchable in the document. And they're going to be coming out with that in the next day or two. But it's just very interesting that the document talks about Venezuela, talks about Smartmatic. Two things, as we talked about yesterday or on Friday, CNN says has nothing to do with Dominion, right? It's in the file, but if you do a control F just to do a quick search for it, you can't find it. Pretty interesting stuff.
We are dealing with the largest fraud and takeover of our country that we've ever seen. I mean, this is a coup. And just so you know, they say things such as that it's that we're fascists, right? That people that are conservative Christians were fascists. They want to take God out of everything, but we're fascists, right? They want you to believe what they believe, or they attack you, but we're fascist. They're the fascists. We are dealing with, in essence, the same thing that Hitler tried to do, this new world order. I don't know if it's a new world order, but it sure feels
they're calling it the Great Reset.
Trying to take root in everything we do.
The UN's calling it the Great Reset. The UN's calling it the Great Reset, and that's the idea of using COVID-19 as an excuse to replace capitalism with socialism, to weaken the United States, redistribute our power to other countries, and to take our wealth and redistribute it to countries that need it more. That's their Great Reset. So it's still there. They're still doing it. They've just gone by a different name. And the fact checkers say there is no Great Reset. There is no Great Reset. It's what the UN is literally calling it. Like, we need a Great Reset. They want a new world order. They want a new hierarchy in global relations. It's just it's insane. So everything that was called a conspiracy theory for years, they're now trying to use the coronavirus as an excuse to rush it through. Everything with the election, with the new world order, Great Reset. It's all obvious. But if you mention it, if you write it, you're labeled a conspiracy theorist. Strangely enough.
Yeah, I don't, Max, I wanted to come in and join everyone, but I'm going to tell you that they're basically trying to steal your country right now. They're trying to steal your country. Are you going to let them?
Yeah, that's the ultimate question. That's the ultimate question. And it's what I ended the weekend podcast on, saying no one's telling you to start shooting cops like they did in McMinn County, Tennessee. But you got to do something that will at least make those World War II veterans who fought the fraud, literally with guns and explosives, make them proud. Whatever you choose to do, however you choose to do it, just try and make sure that you live a life and that you fight in a way that would make those World War II greatest generation patriots proud. So we're coming up on the end of the hour. Any final words, Joe, before we let you go and end the show?
No, I wanted to, I'll be on several shows over the next couple days. I have lots of things that I want to discuss. I just needed to get away. I just. So I apologize for not being on here earlier, but I'll be out of town for the foreseeable future. And I'll be coming in every day live through here.
Well, I hope we get the tech guys to send you a hotspot. And I know that they're working on getting you a mic and some headphones as well. So hopefully that works. Well, thank you so much, Joe, for stopping in. And we'll see Joe more on this week. He just had to get out of town for reasons that we've all explained. So see you tomorrow, Joe.
All right. Take care. God bless you guys.
So that's going to be it for this edition of the podcast. Wow, we're ending on time today. That's going to be it for this edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. If you like the podcast, please do make sure that you subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts. It's very important. It helps us rise to the rankings, help us get sponsorships, right? You can do that in a link in the description. Leave us a good review, subscribe, download. Even if you watch the live version, do the audio version too. And listen, if you can't make it to your computer screen when we go live, you can at least listen as you go about your day. If you don't have an iPhone, you can do that on Google Play Store, on Spotify, Pandora, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, or Podbean. Also, make sure that you like and follow our Facebook page on YouTube. Make sure you hit that subscribe button, hit the bell for notifications, because we go live Monday through Friday, 2 p.m. Eastern. This week will be a little different. Our Thursday show won't be live. It'll be pre-recorded. But every other day will be live this week. So make sure that you like our Facebook page, follow it, and subscribe. Hit the bell for notifications on YouTube as well. You can also text the word freedom to 89517. You'll receive a text alert when we go live because Facebook and YouTube can't be trusted. There's a link in there to subscribe to our email newsletter for our action alerts. We're on Parler at Conservative Daily. My name's at Max McGuire and Joe is at Joe Altman. Feel free to hop over there and give us a follow. And then, of course, this episode brought to you by the Conservative Daily Store. We have those Come and Take It Christmas t-shirts. It's too late to get Thanksgiving ones out to you, but we have Come and Take It Christmas t-shirts. Help support the channel. Pick one up and make sure everyone knows that you're not going to let the Anthony Fauci's of the world take away Christmas this year. Not at all. So I think I went through everything. That's going to be it for this edition of the podcast. My name is Max McGuire. Joe chimed in for a bit. He's out on the road. Remember that the fight to take back our country clearly is not over, but the only way we win is if we all stand up and fight together.